We're gathered here for a session on the church year, the church calendar. There's a problem of having a class about the church calendar. It tends to be informational rather than controversial. I can't expect like us dividing into an exciting evening of two sides on a major issue of the church calendar and battling it back and maybe, who knows what might happen here. I'll present some information, and then I want some sharing on that. And we really have two purposes of gathering together. One is for the Lala here at Holden to have some sense of the calendar, the colors, and some of the symbols. If you don't know what Lala means, it stands for Liturgical Arts Liberation Army. And it's a group here at Holden that does the decorating for the festivals. And also a time just to teach what the ancient church and the church through the years has meant to teach us and help us to learn by having a church calendar. And there are three major Christian traditions that take the church calendar very seriously, really four, and follow it very closely. And I'm just interested in, most of us grew up in one of those four traditions. Does anybody know what they are? They're called the liturgical churches. The Eastern Orthodox. And basically these four traditions follow the same calendar. The Eastern Church has there's some festivals they don't have and vice versa, but basically these four traditions. Did most of us grow up in a liturgical church? Is there anybody that didn't? That's two, so we'll... okay. If you look at the chart at the very top, I really call this, we are a remembering people. And if there's one purpose in having a liturgical year, it is to help us to do what this word means, to remember. Now, we have a normal meaning for the word remember, which would be what? To recall, and that's a powerful word there that we also has much more depth than we give it, to recall. But our normal thing about remembering is to call to mind something that happened in the past. We remember. In other words, we take some time to think about something that happened at one time. Now, the Hebrew understanding or biblical understanding of the word remember, and probably the most, memorable, I guess that's okay, memorable times that this word is used in the New Testament is in the story of the Last Supper. What does Jesus say? Do this in remembrance of me. And if we take our normal meaning for that word and think that's what Jesus was saying, then it doesn't give it the depth. If we think it means we'll just stop once in a while and think about what happened in the past. But what the word remember means to the Jewish mind and the biblical mind is this, that you go back to a past event and you bring that past event up to the present, and then by a ritual action, dramatic ritual action, you actually become a participant. Notice the word recall. It means to call the event forward into the present, so you actually participate in it. And if you've ever been to a Jewish Passover, have some of you been privileged to be invited to a Jewish home for Passover? One thing that happens there, that every Jewish person that celebrates Passover is right there, coming out of Egypt. The angel of death passes over. The flight from, the going forth from Egypt through the sea, the liberation. That when you celebrate Passover in 1982, or next year in 1983, you are actually going back, pulling the event to the present and participating in it. And it And now if we understand that as a basis now for the church calendar, it makes all the difference in the world what we're doing. Because if we don't know that, then we're thinking, well, Easter is just a time when we think about the resurrection of Jesus. Okay. Now, I was also aware of this. I have a friend who was on the faculty here last summer, the teaching staff at Holden, who is the Lutheran pastor in the Old City of Jerusalem, and he sent us a letter just a couple weeks ago thanking us for sending the pottery that their kids made last summer. And it's the only pottery that's been sent from this pot shop to Jerusalem. And one thing he says, I wish that we could teach Christian people to celebrate the way Jewish people celebrate. You know, and I think it's very close to what I'm just saying is what he meant, because he lives in Jerusalem and knows the depth of Jewish celebration of festivals. And that, so that's a little, is that clear, the difference between just remembering? And what's interesting, this is totally off the side, but remember the old argument that Lutherans say that Jesus is actually present in the sacrament, and other Protestants say it's only a remembrance? Do you remember being taught that in confirmation? But now, in dialogue between Reformed and Lutheran, the discovery of what the word remembrance means makes, when you say communion is a remembrance, you're saying exactly the same thing as we've always said when we say Jesus is truly present. Because if the Eucharist is a remembrance, it means it's a calling of that event into the present and then participating in that event now. That's for, if they would have known that at the time of the Reformation, we wouldn't have had a problem. See? Words. Well, now, at the beginning there, through cycles, seasons, and festivals, we participate. And I want to say at the beginning, I think what the church calendar, through the church as it comes to us, invites us to do. And it's really what the gospel is, the church calendar is, and that is that it's a call to discipleship. Finally, has only one purpose, is to call us into Jesus Christ to be Christ's follower and Christ's disciple. Now I'm going to try to show how that that happens. Gabe, I was just looking to see if you were here. I said I'd wait till you come. I invited Gabe to share anything music-wise as far as the church calendar, so just cut in anytime. Call to discipleship. Now, I'll try now to show you how that happens by just going through the year. So we're going to have a fast run now through the year. And if you start there at the left, okay, I'm not quite ready to do that yet, because I have one other concept. From our Hebrew roots, and we talked a lot about that this winter in our winter program, about our Jewish roots of our faith. And from our Hebrew roots, there's a sense of the importance of time. We take special parts of time and fill those special parts with meaning that then gives all of time meaning. And another way to say that is we have a rhythm of our life where we stop at points in our life to remember or recall or participate in what is meaningful and gives us our faith. And the rhythm of a Christian life is that it begins in the water of baptism, and it ends at the service of Christian burial, when the Easter candle is lit. And then between baptism and burial, there's a rhythm of week, every week of your life, and then on the Lord's Day to share the Eucharist. the Eucharist, the Eucharist, the Eucharist, the Eucharist, the Eucharist. And that event then gives meaning to the whole of life. Okay, now, just as each week has its important day that gives the meaning to that entire week, each year, we say, 1 year has its pinnacle times, at which time we gather as a Christian community to participate in a way then that gives meaning to the whole year. And so we have the three major festivals that really inform what our life is all about. And what are they? Christmas, Easter, and Pentecost. A problem we have in the American church, I remember this several years ago, and I wish I would have kept the clippings about it because I don't remember exactly the words, but a group of leaders from the Third World churches came and toured the United States, the churches of America. And when they finally, at the end, when they were meeting to say what they saw, they said, in a way that you don't realize, that the church in the United States is a captive of its culture. And I'm not sure what they meant by that, except I think I have a guess, is that the way we think is more given to us by our culture than our faith and our biblical roots. And I think if this is true of the way we think, it's also true of the way we celebrate. Especially families, once you walk out of the door of the church, a family tends to celebrate life according to the culture. You know, think of that with Christmas and Easter. You know, you do the church thing in church, but then life tends to center more around what culture lifts up as exciting. Am I right? What would an example be?
Easter bunnies.
Easter bunnies. You know. Halloween. Santa Claus. Some say the high point of the American year is the Super Bowl. You know, maybe it is. You know, that our peaks of life tend to be informed more by our culture than by our faith. And what's that?
It depends on who's playing. Yeah,
it depends on who's playing. Who has to play? part of the reason is Christmas is such a big deal in our churches, and Easter is almost as big a deal, and people come on Pentecost and they don't know until they get there, my goodness, unless they read the church newsletter, my goodness, it's Pentecost. And the reason is that our culture has built up its celebrations around these two times, and that pushes us then to make it a great Christian celebration. You know, and if our celebration was informed by our faith rather than by our culture, Pentecost would be an equally and even maybe a more festive celebration than Christmas and Easter. I think it's one example. Another example is what we're doing right now, and that'll get us into where I want to be going anyway, Advent. Advent. And think all the way through now about participation. Advent. We participate with those who waited for Christ. Look at our Jesse tree. You know, I was imagining if every Christian home in America had a Jesse tree. You know, where all of Advent you would think of the Old Testament, the people who waited for Christ. And we talked last night, maybe we could just share a few minutes. One of the joys for those of you who just came, one of the joys of being at Holden is that those of us who haven't gone out during Advent haven't seen one Christmas television special. We haven't gone to one Christmas shopping center. You don't have, and it's marvelous. But we were talking last night, Karen and I were saying, I can't wait to sing Christmas carols. You know, we have a imaginary group here at Holden called the CIA, called the Christmas in Advent. It's a committee that is the legend is supposed to stop anybody that's trying to celebrate Christmas during Advent. But we were talking, and then we said, isn't that the marvelous thing about Advent? It teaches us what it means to wait. Now, I just can't wait now to break out with Christmas carols. But Advent tells me, not yet, not yet. And when I sense that not yet, I participate with those who longed and ached for Christ. Are any of the others having this experience with Advent?
We went out for 2 days.
It's almost like you left Advent and then you came back. Ruth, I saw you shake your head. I think the mood of the church calendar, and where does this come from? We really don't know. It comes from ancient people that gave it to us. That's one of the marvels of the church calendar. It came from the church. It didn't come from a committee that met in the year 1202. But it just kind of came out of the life and the experience of the family through the ages. And what happens, and I think we feel this here now, that by the time Christmas comes, you're really ready to celebrate. And that's why then when Christmas comes, it is not one day, but it is 12 days. The only way we still know that is by da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, everybody sings that, but nobody does that. The 12 days are the time you put everything away because the stores are putting them away. But now, after our waiting, now we do something ritually, and this is a difficult concept to get, but once you get it, then you get liturgy. And that is that we ritually dramatize the event of the past in a way that symbolically and also, I think, in reality, that event happens. So now on Christmas, we actually have a sense that Christ is being born now among us. And because of our Advent preparation, it's like it's the first time that Christ is being born into our hearts. And I had a sense of that yesterday. And one thing, when you fast, you're never supposed to tell anybody, right? Because Jesus said you shouldn't. But I did, because I announced the fast, and that means I had to. Right? I mean, you wouldn't have any choice. There were 15 people that fasted yesterday because the World Council of Churches called an international day of solidarity for peace and hunger yesterday. So some of us didn't eat for three meals. And by afternoon, I'm not a good faster, by afternoon I was, found myself walking into the kitchen and then back out, thinking about food, thinking about the coming of the event when I would finally eat again. And the next thing I ate was the bread of the Eucharist. And that bread has never been more real for me. Did some of the rest of you experience this? And I looked at that morsel of bread, and it was bread, and it was food. And I think it's a sense of Christmas now after our Advent waiting. That we'll gather on Christmas Eve for our first celebration and ritually and symbolically have a sense of the birth of Christ. And we're going to do that in a very special way here in that the manger scene will not have the Christ child until the Christmas Eve service, and we'll bring the Christ child in and see how ritually Jesus is being born in our midst. And then 12 days, a very important thing happens the day after Christmas. And that is, it's the day of St. Stephen. Now, why is that important? Anybody guess? Then 2 days after the day of St. Stephen is the day of the Holy Innocents, the martyrs. Bill? Stephen was the first Christian martyr. And immediately, and the main reason we know it's St. Stephen's Day is because of one Christmas carol. good King Wenceslas went out on the feast of Stephen. You all know that one? That's the only way I think we usually remember that St. Stephen's Day has something to do with Christmas. Notice immediately the day after Christmas how the cross and the manger are tied together. Now this will become more real now as we take each step from Christmas, moving towards Good Friday and Easter. We go on a journey now from manger to cross, and right the day after Christmas, the death and martyrdom, St. Stephen, who bore his cross to the death, reminds us now what this means for us. Then on January 6th is what day? Epiphany. In the early church, this was Christmas. It was on Epiphany. And what happens now on Epiphany is an expanding to us of what the Christmas story means. And again, it's a reality in our church. The culture doesn't make anything about Epiphany, so we tend not to. Or do any of your churches have a great Epiphany celebration? Is you do good. Well, you're Episcopalian.
We always had a service on New Year's Day.
On New Year's Day. Yeah. Which was the name of Jesus. But on New Year's Day. What was the symbolism of it?
I guess starting off the new year
on Friday. Right. So one of the joys of living in the New Mexico culture is that among the Pueblo Indians, Epiphany is one of the greatest days of the year. They call it the Feast of the Three Kings. And if you want to know what Epiphany is like to really celebrate, you leave the Anglo world and go to the world of the Pueblo Indian on Epiphany. But Epiphany really completes Christmas because it's the announcement with the three wise men coming, that this is Jesus for the whole world. The birth of Jesus is a light for all of the nations. Now, one thing that we'll do ritually here at Holden, and bring this home, it's a beautiful idea, we actually act out the story with our little figures. And on Christmas Eve, the wise men are still going to be in Persia, which will be way off in that corner. And then during Epiphany, we'll bring them closer. I mean, during the 12 days of Christmas, bring them closer. And then at the Epiphany Vespers, we'll bring the wise men to the Christ child. Wouldn't that be fun in a family? Imagine at home with the kids or grandchildren. I bet some of you are grandparents. I'm just guessing. The fun of having the wise men on Christmas start way at the other end of the house, and every day bring them a couple feet closer to the manger. And then the kids will always know what Epiphany is. It's the coming of the wise men. Then after Epiphany is the season of Epiphany that goes until Lent. And what does the word Epiphany mean? Do you remember?
Does that something to do with light?
Light. Yeah, it's a season of light. It means manifestation. Do you remember that? The best way to understand Epiphany is to just call it aha. Did you ever not get something, all of a sudden just came and said, ah, I got it. And Epiphany now is to teach us, first with the wise men, who this Jesus is that now we are going to follow to the cross and to the resurrection. So remember some of the texts of Epiphany?
The people who walked in darkness.
People who have walked in darkness have seen a great light. All of the nations. And then we're reminded who Jesus is. Remember, manifest at Cana in Galilee. The jugs of wine. Manifest as the one who casts out demons, the one who conquers evil. Manifest as the one now who heals the sick. Sometimes we wonder why we now have stories from the life of Jesus right after Christmas, but now they're teaching us each Sunday who is this Jesus. And the high point of Epiphany now to teach us who Jesus is the festival of the baptism of Jesus. What day does that happen on? Yeah, it's the first Sunday after the Epiphany. And the baptism of Jesus teaches us now who Jesus is, so you can have that aha more than any other time, because at the baptism of Jesus, I'll draw water here, Jesus in the water, the dove, bird, and the words are this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. And it's a combining then of the Messiah and the suffering servant. And right away we get a clue or an aha at the festival of the baptism of Jesus. That the one born in Bethlehem is the king, but the one who will be the king or is the king will be the king by suffering. Then the last Sunday of Epiphany. Now I was going to tell you why we don't have quinquagesima, sexagesima. What were the others? Septuagesima. Mainly because those words had absolutely no meaning anymore. It just meant the number of Sundays before Easter, didn't it? Or was it after? Oh, well, we'll look it up. Yeah. Now we build up through Epiphany to the Sunday of the Transfiguration. And then the Transfiguration is now Jesus is a king. And now we're pointed towards the cross, because it's from Transfiguration, or from the experience on the mountain now, that Jesus walks to the cross. So now when we enter Lent, the idea is that we should know who this Jesus is now, that we will follow to the cross. If you read the book of Mark, the disciples didn't know at all. And we're called upon to be smarter than the disciples. Now, let's back up to Christmas and Epiphany and just talk about some of the symbols and some of the colors and what they mean. What's the color of Advent?
Blue.
Used to be purple.
That's official now?
It's recommended. And then you want to say who, by whom. And there is an answer to by whom, at least for Lutherans. It's the Inter-Lutheran Commission on Worship. I think the purpose was to make a differentiation between Lent and Advent. What is blue? The color? What?
Heavenly.
Mm-hmm. And probably the word that... would be so close to that, it's the color of hope. Now, if there's anything in all the texts of Advent, it's hope. You know, and blue is the color of hope. So notice our triptych. It's blue with purple trim for traditionalists. other symbols of Advent are the people in chains waiting to have the chains broken. Symbols of bondage that will be freed. Symbols of crying out and expectation. These are the moods, moods of Advent. And then, what's the color of Christmas? White. Yeah, and it's a hard one, I found, to keep red and green out of the church. You have green in there with the trees, of course. But last summer here at Holden, we have Christmas in July, and I walked in and the whole village center was decorated in red and green. And that is the, quote, secular color for Christmas. red and green. We don't know where it came from or really what meaning it has. I think it's from holly, right? And poinsettias. But the church's color for Christmas is white. And then other colors that would be added would be colors of the coming of a king, gold, yellows, the coming of light, yellow, oranges. But white is the color of Christmas. What's the color of St. Stephen's Day? What? Red. Anytime you have a celebration of a martyr, it's red. So then the day after St. Stephen's Day is St. John, then it goes back to white again because John wasn't a martyr. That's a little quirk. Well, but at least now you know it. I don't know what we do with people we're not sure if they were martyrs or not. But red is the color of the martyrs, the blood of the martyrs. Okay. Then Epiphany, Epiphany itself is white, and then we have some green Sundays. But white, and the moods of Epiphany would be light. Light that's spreading over the whole world. Light that's going forth. Any other ideas? What would symbols of Epiphany be? Baptism? The baptism of Jesus? Anything that would have to do with Jesus being born for the whole world and manifest to the whole world would be symbols of Epiphany. Often the traditional symbol of Epiphany is the three crowns of the three wise men. Okay. Should we look at Lent? And now, I think the site. Now, notice we really have three cycles in the church here, and we've just left the Christmas cycle. When we participate in Jesus is born among us, and then we come to deeply understand that Jesus is a light for the whole world. Then on Ash Wednesday, we move into the Easter cycle. And one of the joyful things of the church here that we as Protestants especially tend to forget is the fun of Shrove Tuesday. You know, the night before Lent begins, because Lent is a time of more austerity. And the freedom that other traditions have to really have happy parties, even feasts of fools, on the Tuesday before Lent begins. And the best I know some Lutheran churches do is they have a pancake supper. Right.
Where did the pancake come from?
I don't know. Do you know that? Oh, to use up the butter, because you didn't use butter during Lent. Okay, that leads us to, we start Lent with Ash Wednesday, then we have the days of Lent. And then we have the beginning of Holy Week, which is Passion Sunday. Then Holy Week, Maundy Thursday, Good Friday. Then Easter Eve Saturday. And then Easter. Now, what has been our typical understanding of Lent? What do you think? Now, you give. Now, this is a great time to give something up. What did you give up when you were a child? Candy? You did? We didn't give anything up when I was a kid because we weren't Catholic, I remember. That was one way of not being Catholic, because we were the people that didn't have to give anything up. Did you give anything up? a way to understand Lent now is when we move into what's called the Easter cycle, is that Lent exists for the sake of Easter. Uh, we begin Lent with Ash Wednesday, and the strange thing in Lutheran churches, we call it Ash Wednesday. We look forward and we announce it as Ash Wednesday. We invite people to come to the Ash Wednesday service, and then we won't have anything to do with ashes. Right? Have you ever thought of that? Why do we call it Ash Wednesday? And at least more and more Lutheran churches are beginning the beautiful symbolism that on this time, it's a time of repentance, of austere confession, and then to go forward and the ashes on your forehead, and then if the pastor knows your name, says your name with the ashes, and will just say, remember you are dust, and to dust you will return. Bill. Mm-hmm. When I've used ashes in a service, I've asked people, reminded them of the words of Jesus, to not wear your piety. So I said, as you're on your way out of the church, go like that.
That's what they do in chaplains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember when I was in high school, that was, you'd just follow Catholics around all day looking at the dot. Remember that?
And,
mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I think as this practice becomes more common in our churches, I think it's a good thing to remember is to wipe. Well, what does it mean? Now, the rituals are meaningless unless, I mean, that's obvious, they're meaningless unless we know their meaning. We enter Lent with ashes, and ashes are a reminder of our mortality, our need for God, our need for salvation. And without knowing that need, Holy Week and Good Friday, the crucifixion, the resurrection are meaningless. We don't know that we now enter this season knowing that we are dust and that we need God's grace. And the ashes are the ancient, ancient remembrance of that. So I would... Do any of your churches share the ashes on your stuff? It's becoming more common, I think. Yeah,
isn't it a tradition also to use the palm branches from
mm-hmm. Passion Sunday? Yeah, the palms from Passion Sunday, the tradition is to save them and then burn them and use the ashes for Ash Wednesday. A reminder that how our praises, you know, turn to denial. You know, again, it's a reminder of who we are. Ash Wednesday isn't so much a time to grovel as a time to be realistic. I think there's a difference, and that's what Ash Wednesday is. Now, Lent, we don't understand Lent until we understand Easter. So I have to jump ahead, that Easter is a time, really the whole Easter Eve, Good Friday, Maundy Thursday, it's a time when ritually, by remembrance, we die and we are raised. We will die with Christ, we will be raised with Christ. And now Lent then becomes a time when we think especially what we will die to and what we will be raised to. So it's a time of introspection. It's a time on Easter when I am crucified with Christ and am resurrected with Christ, what in my life do I die to? And I think about that and think about that, and that's why it's a time for quietness during Lent. And I also practice the things I will be raised to in a special way. Practice charity, practice almsgiving, practice advocacy, practice caring about the poor, practice all the peacemaking. Everything that I will be raised to on Easter, I practice during Lent. So Lent is a time to prepare for the Easter dying and rising. Is that a new thought of to what Lent is? Or I hope it's been communicated that way. It's really those two things, again, I contemplate what I will die to, and I practice what I will be raised to. In Easter. So Lent exists for the sake of Easter. Now, this 1 week of the year now is the high point of the Christian year, from Passion Sunday to Easter. Now, what happens in our culture is this, and it's exactly what the world, I'll just use the word the world, it's what the world wants, and that is to have festivity and celebration without the cross. And the way we do that is everybody goes to church on Palm Sunday, waves palm branches and sings Hosanna, goes home, comes back on Easter morning to sing the Alleluias of Easter. Is that the custom for probably most people in your churches? You're different. Good.
I know.
I'd always be frustrated. It was getting better in Albuquerque. And you'd have a big turnout for Palm Sunday and Easter, and every year there were more that were participating in what was going on during the week, right? Paul was on the worship committee. What happens now? Why has it been changed from Palm Sunday to Passion Sunday? Really because what happens on that day. What we do on that day, and this is you'll have to understand ritual drama to understand this, is it say, here's your church room, here's the altar table, candles, etc. We turn this room into our Jerusalem for this week. It becomes our Jerusalem. Now, in this room, we will dramatically act out the suffering and the death and the resurrection of Jesus. And then I will be called to participate, to die and be raised in this room. So that happens on Passion Sunday. That's what this room becomes. So we march into the room with our palm branches, just like now it's our Jerusalem. Then we hear the story of what will happen during the week. We hear the Passion reading. And then on Thursday we begin what's called the I can't spell it now. I don't have it on the try. Does anybody know? Do you know? It means the 3 days. Don't write that down. But I have it here. Right, TRIDUUM. TRIDUUM, it means the 3 days. And what happens is on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, we have one liturgy. It happens on Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday, but you just simply go home for a while. And we know this because on Thursday night there's not a benediction. Friday night there's not a benediction, but there's just a break in 1 3-day liturgy. And once people understand that this is a 3-day liturgy and that if you come Thursday and Saturday but miss Friday, it's like leaving one worship service and totally missing out on part of a continuing drama. Okay, what happens on these 3 days? Thursday, we call this Maundy Thursday, and it simply means command, and it's from the command, you shall wash each other's feet. You ever thought about how we say, well, we always have the Lord's Supper because Jesus said, do this, but Jesus said also, wash each other's feet. Ever thought? And then we don't do that. Well, now we do. Thursday night is a time of foot washing. And the reason we do this is to teach us right away what the meaning of the cross and the meaning of Easter is, that you will be servants. It's to make it as clear as it can be. Then we celebrate Holy Communion, because this is the night that Jesus instituted the Last Supper. Then something very important takes place after the Holy Communion. We call it the stripping of the altar, where you move everything out of the church room that's decorative. So it's just, and while that's happening, someone is chanting Psalm 22. And then you feel, and you truly do feel, the humiliation of Jesus. Remember how I said we're in Jerusalem now. We're there. And we're with Jesus. And then we exit in silence. Come back on Good Friday evening. And the Good Friday service is different. It used to be kind of a funeral service for Jesus, where you would almost have Jesus... it was a very much of a grief service. Do you remember that? Or you really hadn't succeeded that night if everybody wasn't crying.
In the Episcopal Church, they draped the cross with a black drape that entirely covered the whole cross.
Yeah. And it should be an austere time, you know. That's what the new liturgy does on Good Friday is to make it a very quiet, solemn service of victory. But the cross is the kingdom. The cross is the winning of the battle for salvation and the redemption of the world. And it closes with a very quiet adoration of Christ and adoration of the cross. And then singing a hymn that reminds us that in the cross Jesus triumphed over all the powers of evil. Then we leave Friday and return then for Saturday night. And this is a service, this is the most important service in the entire year. And it's interesting that it is, because very few congregations do it, and congregations that do it, very few people go, and that's the Easter Eve vigil. And the reason the vigil is so important is that on this night, and this is really the Christian Passover. You know, and I'm always think it's strange how many Christian churches have the Jewish Passover during the week, but then they don't have the Christian Passover, which is the Easter Eve vigil. And in this service, and don't have time to go through everything that happens in the service, but you enter the church in total darkness, and the light of the Easter candle breaks the darkness. And then central to the service is the sacrament of baptism and also a baptism renewal. And in the baptism renewal is at the point when we actually participate by dying ritually, symbolically, yet in reality we die. And there's wonderful ways to remind this. In Albuquerque, everyone came up to the front and received water and a cross on the forehead. Here at Holden, we have great tubs of water here and spray everybody with water, and it's fun. You know this if you open the hymnal, the pages that are wet. The renewal of baptism, when we actually again experience what we first experienced in baptism, and that's dying with Christ and then being raised with Christ. And coming forth from the baptism renewal, we enter into Easter. First, the first Eucharist of Easter on Easter Eve, and then the great Eucharist of Easter Day. We come forth out of our death now into this life. And Easter then is such a festival, not because it's springtime, but rather because in Easter God affirms everything that happened in Lent, Holy Week, and Easter. The washing of feet, God says yes. The institution of the supper, God says yes in Easter. The death of Jesus on the cross for the redemption of the whole world, yes. Discipleship is following the way of the cross, God says yes on Easter. Everything is affirmed now that we've experienced. And you see, if you haven't experienced these services, how Easter Sunday then can only be kind of a cultural ritual of springtime. If you haven't gone through the symbolic dying and being raised with Christ. Easter lasts how many Sundays? We call it a week of weeks. 7. And then from there, then we have Pentecost, which is a great festival now of the coming of the Holy Spirit. And again, ritually, Pentecost should be a renewal of the Holy Spirit in our lives to send us forth into the world. And then the whole rest of the year, then the long green period, is discipleship, 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 discipleship. What does it mean now? To die with Christ and to be raised with Christ. Now that's a quick tour through the church calendar. But Gabe, anybody have anything to add? We didn't get into all the colors and symbols, but yeah, or it might be like Christmas was already the winter festival, and when the Roman Empire was Christianized, then the festival was like baptized. Now it needs to be rebaptized.
I don't think it's quite fair to say that they did it not to be too conspicuous. I think they did it for the exact reason it was there. There already was a festival. Mm-hmm. It's the same as the Roman Catholics. They built their big churches in South America on temple sites. Mm-hmm. Because people were used to coming there to worship already. It was easier to get them to there. In fact, they say there's probably been more human sacrifice at one of the big cathedral sites in Mexico City than anywhere else in the world. It was an Aztec temple there before. And that was done intentionally.
I think both Christmas and Easter were set.
Yeah. Well, Easter again is tied to the moon, so it's very
If you don't know that, sometimes some groups that don't celebrate Christmas and Easter, like Jehovah's Witnesses, will really make a point of that, that it's a pagan festival, and the answer is yes. Have most of you been to an Easter vigil? Well, it's 2 minutes to 8. Anybody else? We barely started with this, but it's a brief introduction.